Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey there, before we talk to Buzz, let's talk about our Amazon link at bobseska.com. If you're a parent of teen girls and you're looking for a way to explain to them about abortion and the right to choose, go to Amazon right now through our Amazon link just beneath the logo at bobseska.com to purchase Kimberly Johnson's young adult novel, Peyton's Choice. It's the story of a 12th grader who loses her virginity and gets pregnant in the process. It's all about relationships, a girl's place in the world, and a right to choose that's increasingly endangered in the age of Trump. Again, search for Peyton's Choice by Kimberly Johnson through our Amazon link. Just click the all caps links beneath the logo and you're all set. Using our link will take you to the front page of Amazon where you shop as normal, but because you used our link, we receive a small commission on some of your purchases. Thanks for shopping through our Amazon link, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
You're a lawyer, for God's sake. How the hell can you let this shit go through?
Look, this, Nixon can't say that.
Well, you did say it, sir.
Never, I didn't say that. I never said that about Jews. Makes me sound like an anti-Semite.
Well, we can check the tapes again.
No need to check the tapes. I know what I said. Look, this, you lost your mind. Nixon can't... Look, Al, Nixon can't say this. Well, I can't say that.
We could delete it.
We're doing the best we can, sir.
Well, it's not good enough.
Well, would you have us black it out, sir?
Oh, we could. We could write expletive deleted.
Can all these goddamn and Jesus Christ out? Jesus.
Mr. President, don't you see that all these deletion marks in the transcript make it look as though you... You do nothing but swear?
So is my mother's memory. You think I want the whole goddamn world to see my mother like this, raising a dirty mouth?
Well, we can start again, sir, but it means we don't really have the staff to do that.
Then start over. Just start over. The world will see only what I show them.
Bob Seska.
Bob Seska. You really are sick.
The Bob Seska Show.
I don't know why I find that clip so hilarious. Just the frantic scribbling and Nixon crying about his mommy. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, May 21, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com, the greatest soap ever. Hi, my name is Bob. What's up?
Hello, Bob.
Day 852 of the Trump crisis, day 13 of the constitutional crisis, 532 days until the 2020 presidential election. Don't tell Trump. He thinks it's tomorrow. He's already evaluating his opponents, thinking, shit, it's going to be Biden tomorrow, and then I can beat Biden, and then I'll be president again for another 16 years, maybe. Oh, look, right over there, it's TV's Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. Oh, it's so darkly funny in here.
It's listen to that movie. That movie. I'm the only person on this planet who watches Oliver Stone's Nixon as a comedy. As
it's it's a dark comedy. That's that's exactly what it is. So it's only fitting at this time. Damn it. I'm so upset today. I was supposed to have lunch with Bob Mueller, but it looks like he stood me up again. He says he wants someplace more private. It's been that kind of week, Bob. Yesterday I had to go to court for a speeding ticket, and I lost. Mm-hmm. The judge says I have to pay the fine, but I'm not sure I do since he was clearly appointed by Obama.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's true.
So you get you get off the ticket that way.
God damn it.
That's how that goes.
Shit. Well,
mainly, I just hope Grumpy Cat is happy now.
Just too soon. I think it's too soon to even joke about losing Grumpy Cat.
Yeah, I we'll edit that out. Pretend.
Yeah, sounds good.
We'll never speak of this again.
All right, shit. You know what? You're totally on board with impeachment now. I'm happy to welcome you to the impeachment train. Thank you.
As I will discuss on my show on Thursday, this is my little tiny Walter Cronkite moment.
Yeah.
Walter Cronkite declared one night on the news, he was the most trusted man in America. Mm-hmm. I'm far from that. Yeah. I know that. I'm but an ant compared to him. But I'm doing a similar thing in my own small little ant world. And that is that one night he said, you know what? America is losing the war in Vietnam. And I say we get out of it and get out of it now. Well, we didn't get out of it now. But that instantly turned the tide in America. And it was an unusually editorial stance for an anchorman.
Yeah.
Especially one who had played it very, very straight all his career from his time as a war correspondent in World War II up through his near retirement days as anchor of the CBS Evening News. And he, at one point, he just drew the line and said, you know, I've been there, I've seen it, I've reported on it, and I've concluded that we've lost this war and we must get out immediately. Mm-hmm. Well, when the president, Lyndon Johnson at the time, heard that, he knew it was over. Now, this president doesn't even hear me or anyone else for that matter, but especially not me.
Yeah.
But this is the moment in my career where I just completely break away from any pretense of trying to be fair, because to be fair at this point is to make a deal with the devil. I mean, I can't do that. There is no other side, in my opinion. And so this is the moment I'm saying we must impeach. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my, we must get out of Vietnam, and that we are otherwise losing that war.
Yeah.
And so this is my moment for throwing a flag on that and saying, this is it. This is where I just stop pretending anymore that there's any other way to do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's been interesting to see the pressure build. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah, sure. And it's much more meaningful, I think, that you've been so prudent for so long and now you're taking this posture. It gives it more weight. It gives it more gravity. That
to a few people, anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, still, it's important, and you have a considerable audience, and this show has a considerable audience, and there are people who follow along and take a tip off of what we say on this show. And you, I think, have been quite pragmatic and measured about your opinions, not only in terms of impeachment, just in terms of the overall investigation. And that's valuable because I tend to lean on the panic button, especially now.
I guess you could say I'm leaning on the panic button, but I feel like I waited until I was really sure there was a fire before pulling the alarm. And it certainly appeared, you know, there was smoke, there were embers, but now I see flames. And now we got to get the fire department in here. And I just don't think we can wait any longer. I think that's the sum of it.
Well, I think this train has left the station. I think we're careening toward an impeachment process. And I think Nancy Pelosi is going to see that writing on the wall. Certainly today in private meetings with the Democratic leadership in the House, she was under significant pressure. Apparently, at least five members of Pelosi's leadership team pressed her during a closed door leadership meeting to allow the House Judiciary Committee to start an impeachment inquiry. Yeah. And good luck to me, because I can't say the word inquiry. Very easy.
Inquiry.
Thank you so much for that.
It's an obvious word, Bob.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I wonder where you got that, but I think I know. But that we'll have that conversation another day. Some words are words.
Oh no! I finally just got that joke. I finally got obviously.
Very, very, very inside.
Yes, it
joke.
Is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
But I mean, it's clear at this point. There really is no longer any choice. She's put this off. I've been with her all the way, and I still support and respect her.
Yeah, me too.
Just think that now she has to do it. Now she has to. Because, I mean, it's ultimately, and this is, you were talking about, there's so many directions to go in, forgive me. But you were talking about the five top members of her caucus who were urging her to launch impeachment hearings. Well, she also got a phone call yesterday from Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Now, I can't
obviously.
Obviously, I mispronounced that word. But she got a call from Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler.
Nadler.
We'll edit. We're gonna clean this up so nicely in editing, you won't believe it.
I have an inquiry about your position on Jerry Nadler.
There you go. I don't know. It's there. Give me two D's and I feel better.
Yeah, but, there you go.
At any rate, this is a very important call because it is his committee that would launch impeachment hearings. It is ultimately up to him. However, there is a smart tradition that you get the blessing of the House Speaker before you, as Judiciary Committee Chairman, go off on that particular bent. And he has not gotten that blessing yet, but he still has that option. This is, I can't think of greater pressure on Pelosi than this phone call from Nadler knocking at her door.
Right.
Say, hey, impeachment guy here. Can I help you with anything? So the pressure is enormous at this point. I don't see how she can withstand it even another 24 hours.
And I appreciate her strategy. I understand what her strategy is. I disagree with her strategy just because from a point of view of wanting to push this process along because I see the urgency of it. I see the urgency of having a compromised Russian agent in the White House. And again, you know, there are so many things that need to be revealed in all of this. And I think an impeachment inquiry will help us get there, especially when it comes to the counterintelligence information that I know Adam Schiff has been trying to get his hands on, trying to get a briefing from the FBI about all of that. We don't know anything along those lines. And in fact, it's the most desperate aspect of this entire investigation. You know, with Nancy Pelosi, I think that for the longest time leading up to the past couple of months, I think Nancy Pelosi was preparing to just deal with the results of the Mueller investigation and anything that might circulate around that. Maybe some of the things involving Puerto Rico and so on, some of the other egregious abuses of power by Donald Trump. I don't think she ever anticipated that Donald Trump was going to obstruct justice in plain sight by ordering his people not to submit to subpoenas and so on, not to provide Congress with document requests, to do all of these things, to block Don McGahn from going down to the Hill and testifying there. Even to the point of Robert Mueller, for some reason, again, I'm going back, and this may be where I'm just ahead of you. Oh, you're with me on this with Robert Mueller, huh?
Yeah, now I am. Yes.
Okay, because I'm 100% on board with this mantra. Where's Mueller? Why isn't Mueller stepping up? At this point, we're finding out that he's really quibbling over the details of his testimony. He's not marching up there as he should, as with any government official who is requested by Congress to go up to the Hill and testify. I mean, whether it's like my dad has testified on the Hill on many occasions back in the 90s, you know, all the way up to top level officials. Why is Robert Mueller dragging his feet on this? Well, the explanation that we're getting now is that he's concerned about looking political. Which to me is a big, big ass.
What's the matter,
cop-out.
Bob? You're retired. Go. You know, get a throw up a hammock between two trees in Maryland. Just take a, you know, relax after this. But right now, we need your testimony.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand. What's he worried about? His future career? Is that Bob Mueller's concern?
Maybe.
I'm not sure he has a future career. Maybe he does. Maybe I've underestimated him. But haven't you just about done it all?
Yeah.
When you've done what he's done. And this is over. They've been negotiating for some time, and I took that as a good sign that Mueller was, you know, working out the details, like how long he would be questioned, and maybe what sorts of questions he would be asked to a certain degree. But this business of not wanting significant parts of his testimony to be public, and that's what the breakdown in talks is now between the Democrats and Mueller, is how much of what he will say to Congress will be public, and Congress finds his proposal on that unacceptable.
Yeah.
And I'm worried for Congress. I hope they're not being too picky. I don't know exactly what their parameters are, but I'm much more upset at Mueller for not clearly not wanting
now. Wow.
To defend his own work, which he knows, he's even objected to Barr about it being twisted, and yet he's passing on an opportunity to clear the record?
Yeah.
I don't understand this. I really don't.
You know, I'm marking the time and date. It is May 21, 2019. It is 1:47 p.m. on a Tuesday, and Buzz Burbank is lining up with Sarah Kendzior from the Gaslit Nation on the Mueller front. And you know what? It's not surprising in the slightest, because what other conclusion can we draw in all of this? I mean, CNN reporting just today, special counsel Robert Mueller's team has expressed reticence to him testifying publicly in front of the House Judiciary Committee. First of all, why is it his team? I guess he's got lawyers. I guess his lawyers are advising him now. Robert Mueller has lawyers or a team to when he can and can't testify. This is according to sources familiar with the matter. His team, once again, there it is, his team. Are those his other prosecutors?
I'm not sure. I'd have to see the bigger context of this. They may just be referring to his own personal team of attorneys representing him on this matter. I know that there were talks to have members of his investigative team join him at the witness table for that testimony. So I'd have to look at the bigger context, or maybe I missed something in there, but I'm not sure which team that refers to. I'm assuming it's his immediate legal personal team.
Probably so. It basically says here his team has expressed that he does not want to appear political. One option is to have him testify behind closed doors, which is unacceptable. But certain caution, numerous options are being considered in the negotiations between the committee and the special counsel's team. Nadler has called for public testimony. Of course he has, because it needs to be public testimony. See, I don't get this. You know, again, the framing of Robert Mueller from the beginning is this guy's a Boy Scout. This guy plays by the book. Yeah. Well, when the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee says, we need you to come down and testify about the report you wrote, a patriot, someone who plays by the book, says, sure, when do you need me? And that person appears on the Hill and testifies in public, like Hillary Clinton did for 11 hours.
Right. Now, she didn't have, I don't think she had as much, I'm not sure she had as much constitutionality to defend, if that makes any sense, as much law and order to defend as Mueller did. He had another responsibility. He had another master to whom he really did need to answer. I find it astounding that some compromise couldn't be met. I find this makes Mueller seem uncooperative to not find that middle ground. I swear it baffles me as to why he would pass up an opportunity to clarify his misinterpreted report.
Yeah.
One that is, I can't believe, I'm astounded at the speed at which Mueller's report was turned around and sold to the American public to be exactly the opposite of what it is, and that has become accepted fact in a majority of America. How do we unring that bell? I don't know. It's a terrifying thing. It concerns me greatly.
Yeah, well, we've seen on many, many occasions, especially in situations with special counsels, that, we can compare Robert Mueller to Patrick Fitzgerald, or we can compare Robert Mueller to Ken Starr, or Archibald Cox, or Jaworski. I mean, we can go down the line of special counsels throughout history. And what we have seen is a series of special counsels who have had no problem updating the public in the form of press conferences during their actual investigations. Now, Robert Mueller, I give Robert Mueller the benefit of the doubt when it comes to that. I appreciate the fact that he didn't stick himself out in the forefront like James Comey may have beforehand and undermined his own investigation, or Ken Starr for that matter, really emphasizing the politics of all of that. But now that it's over, we're 2 months since the report actually dropped and was handed down to Bill Barr. Numerous questions, numerous misrepresentations, accusations of those misrepresentations coming from Mueller's own office, and yet Mueller is resistant to not only hold a press conference, which would have been a piece of cake the day after the Barr memo came out or whatever, sometime within close proximity of us actually getting the report, and he refuses to do that, and he's refusing, or at least stonewalling, dragging his feet on this,
as the Republic gets torn down by this maniac, this illegitimate and corrupt president in the White House, who is flaunting the rule of law, who is
The house is on fire, and he's a fireman, and he's not doing anything. You mentioned benefit of the doubt. If I'm guilty of anything, it's that. I'm not ashamed to say that I may have been and was probably and may prove to be wrong about Robert Mueller. But I did what you mentioned. I gave him the benefit of the doubt, and I actually respected much of how he conducted himself up to a point. And then what the hell happened? We've known all along, on one hand, that he's a straight arrow prosecutor. That's the rap from both Republicans and Democrats who've known him and worked with him for years and years. And at the same time, we also know he's a conservative man and a Republican. And was that the final straw for him? Was that the determining factor on where he would come to? I don't know. It's all a great mystery. There's only one way to find out, and that's to get his testimony. And that can be compelled. He can be forced to testify. We've seen some success. This executive privilege argument, I don't think is going to hold up. I hope not. It should not. And, you know, it's funny. Executive privilege has only been around for, 50 years, maybe less. It's not in the Constitution. It's not a law. It's just a thing that we've kind of done this way. And that's really not how government is not run by things that we've just kind of done that way. Generally we rely on things like old, laws and that sort of that sort of thing.
My concern in all of this is, of course, in the absence of normalcy, you can only go to lean toward the abnormal. And when I start to see maneuvers like this, like we're hearing from Robert Mueller's quote-unquote team with excuses as to why we haven't heard testimony from him yet. And by the way, none of that report from CNN said anything about executive privilege. Just wanted to note that, because that's what I was concerned about. The reason he didn't appear a couple of Wednesdays ago, I thought, was because Trump asserted executive privilege over the entire Mueller report.
Another weird thing about this. Mueller seems to be going his own way despite all this. In other words, he's not listening to Democrats. He's not listening to the White House. He's carving his own path here. And maybe, and it's no longer a benefit of the doubt, I'm just mathematical odds, there's a pinch of a chance that maybe he does know what he's doing here. But it looks awfully, awfully bad. And you're right. The house is on fire. He's a fireman. He's standing there with his hands in his pockets. That's not helping.
Yeah.
It's just not helping.
And again, I go to why. I want to know why.
Yeah, well,
and this not wanting to appear political to me isn't an excuse good enough to commensurate
not
with
anymore.
The nature
not
of the emergency.
Not now that the report is written and the investigation, his part of the investigation is over. No, so it doesn't matter if he's political or not. This is a matter of law and order, which he's supposed to be all about. So, get the hell into the witness chair and talk.
Yeah, again, I couple this with some of the ambiguities that we see in the report, whether it's about obstruction of justice or whether or not or why he didn't pursue the money trail, why he didn't pursue the counterintelligence investigation, handing it back to the FBI, why there was the conflict between collusion and conspiracy, but yet all of these instances of collusion are outlined in Volume 1. There are lots of different things that I'm kind of mixing in together. And I'm wondering if all of this leads to the conclusion. And again, I'm just spitballing this because in absence of a normal explanation, all I can do is go to the abnormal. And what my question is Robert Mueller perhaps locked into this cultural thing?
Part of the conspiracy?
Well, or that Bill Barr, I think Bill Barr is locked into the red hat Trump cultural movement aspect.
Hard to say. Hard to say. But at the same time, and this makes it all the more confusing, why did Mueller then include so many clear and specific law violations for Congress to follow up on? If he was going to if the purpose of those conclusions and non-conclusions was to blur, to muddy the water, he used an awful lot of clear water before adding the mud. There are a lot of clear pieces of evidence in there of criminality, in terms of possible collusion, but most especially in the second part about obstruction of justice. Why so many breadcrumbs if he didn't want Trump to be punished. It doesn't make sense to me.
Right. Well, the other explanation that I can kind of conjure, I can kind of see the possibility in it, although I think it's quite obscure. It's quite a distant possibility in all of this. But the thing is, I wonder if people who have seen the evidence and who have spent time talking to the witnesses and the people on Mueller's team, maybe Nancy Pelosi, maybe the heads of the intelligence committees in the House and the Senate, if there's something in this that should make us not worry as much or not feel as urgent as we feel. We need to know. If you're thinking, well, the reason we're slow walking this is because there's really just a lot of nothing here, then tell us there's a lot of nothing. What we're hearing is a lot of disaster in action. We're seeing a slow motion train wreck that happens to be getting faster and faster as time goes on. And if there's something to mitigate that sense of sheer panic among those of us who have been following this story, tell us. Let us know why that is.
Please, please, kind sir, please, yes.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. I mean, so, and again, we're only barely scratching the surface at this point in terms of everything else that's happening in this story. And we're going to get to a lot of these details as the show rolls on.
It's like if you were, imagine all each one of the stories. You've seen this barrage of news. I mean, just in today, the Cohen revelation, we find out the U.S. intercepted six Russian war planes yesterday. And this stuff, and this, there have been like a half a dozen headlines like that just, you know, in the first half of today. It's just constantly raining down. This has to stop. This must stop. And it all goes back to one guy, the guy everybody talks about every day, because that's the way he wants it and that's the way he keeps it stirred up. And this too must stop.
Yep.
This division of America is just irritated. It's a wound that's irritated more every day. And he's the irritant. He's the sand and the disease that gets into that wound.
Yeah.
And it has to stop now.
And the main thing, I think, and I think this transcends politics. The main thing that needs to happen right now is that all of the leadership involved with the entire Russia investigation, the Russian attack from top to bottom, whether it's Mueller, Pelosi, Schiff, Nadler, etc.
The traitors.
The entire group of traitors, of course. The conflicted Democrats.
Conflicted, treasonous Democrats.
Yeah. I mean, what they really need to do is take advice from that Ron Silver scene in the West Wing that I play all the time, in which Ron Silver says, "Democrats, stop cowering in the corner screaming, 'Please don't hit me.'" That you need to take a stand. And I swear to God, anyone who might claim that, "Oh, you're just playing politics, Nancy Pelosi," or "Oh, you're just playing politics, Robert Mueller," those people are going to change their opinion or have a different opinion from the get-go if you just own your opinion. If you just take a posture and say, "You know what? We're proceeding this way, God damn it!" And you figure out it. You tell me why I shouldn't.
Lead.
Yes.
Yeah, lead. That's maybe what you're supposed to be doing. And you hear all these arguments against impeachment, like, well, for one thing, it'll never work because it won't get by the Senate. You remember, if you, with the impeachment hearings, you put this stuff on television and more stuff comes out, and it's on TV this time, which will also be on social media. You know how those clips turn up.
Yeah.
And so this is going to get around, and some shocking things are going to be presented to the American people that they have not confronted yet or have not been confronted with so far.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, maybe they weren't paying attention. Put it on TV and subsequently the internet, and they will pay attention.
Yeah.
And there came a point, and people say it'll never get by the Senate. Not as things stand now, and maybe you're right. However, in 1974, the U.S. Senate, Republicans therein, majority of them giving Nixon everything he wanted, backing everything he did. And then in three short weeks, they turned around and only five Republican senators were still supporting him. It can happen that fast, folks. It's just that quick once it happens. They will stick with Trump until they don't. And the House Democrats can make that moment come sooner. if they dive into these impeachment hearings. That's one argument against impeachment that's false. The other false argument against impeachment is, oh, it's going to cost us 2020. People want us focused on health care and climate and wages. And of course they do. That is their own personal number one priority.
Yeah.
But that will all be made a hella easier if we get rid of Trump. I think saving democracy takes just slight precedent over healthcare at the moment, as yeah. I think it takes over every other terrible, horrible, important thing in the news.
Yeah.
And so there's this fear. There's been this fear among Democratic leaders that, oh, if we pursue impeachment, people won't like us and they won't vote for us in 2020. And but what about this? What about this? Is this possible? Is it possible they won't see you as leaders and they won't like you because you didn't take a stand? Is it possible that because you didn't lead because you were weak and you didn't fight back, that you just rolled over and let it all happen?
Yeah.
Even down to the election, is that going to stir up the voters to vote for you? I heard somebody say, and I think this is true, a lot of Democrats just won't turn out if the Democratic leaders in Washington don't step up and take action. Is that a risk you want to take? And the other thing is, well, what if Donald Trump wins? Well, we didn't think he'd win the first time, but that could happen no matter how this goes. But it's less likely, as not only has he lost a lot of his base, but you put this stuff on TV and impeachment hearings, and he comes out battered and bruised.
First of all, I was chuckling at your use of the word hella, which I thought was perfect.
Thank you. I want to make sure I connect with the kids, okay?
But the other thing is, you know, as far as this whole idea of impeachment being a non-starter because there aren't votes in the Senate.
Right.
Like, every single piece of legislation that Nancy Pelosi has passed in the House, there aren't enough votes to pass it in the Senate. Sorry, that's an across-the-board thing.
Right.
You don't get to make decisions based on what the other chamber is going to do or not going to do. You pass your agenda based on what you can do at that moment. And that includes passing articles of impeachment when you have the votes, when there is momentum along those lines. So I don't buy this fact that, well, you know, it's going to fail in the Senate. He's not going to be convicted in the Senate, so why bother? Well, guess what? All of this shit that Nancy Pelosi has passed is going to fail. The other thing going back to Robert Mueller and the politics excuse, obviously, this new story, and again, I think it's CNN. I haven't seen any further confirmation, but regardless, CNN is reporting that Robert Mueller is balking because he doesn't want to be seen as political. Well, guess what? Leaving so much for the Congress investigate made it political. It already is political, Robert Mueller. So step up and pursue this.
God damn it.
Yeah. Sleep in the bed that you have made. You have left all of these loose threads up to Congress to investigate.
He's such a tease.
Really is.
I'll never date him again. He's such a tease.
That's right.
Yeah, I've been advised by some not to talk about Watergate because, well, that was such a different time. You know, they had everybody had like three TV channels there was no internet. There was no Instagram or Facebook or anything else. It was a very different time. So whatever worked in the Watergate era won't work now. Disagree. As I said just a moment ago, I think the best of that stuff ends up on the internet and on social media anyway. So I'm not worried about that part of it, and I don't think that really applies. What happened? Why did the Republican Senate turn around on Nixon so quickly in 74? Well, because for the first time, see, Trump's been a gravy train for Republicans up to this point. It's just one hand washes the other. It's just been going great. Never mind all the carnage along the side of the road. But the split second he becomes their political liability, that embarrassing hearings on TV could make him, they will bail on him like rats off a ship.
Yeah.
Use that again. This goes back to stop saying we're screwed. Stop saying there's no hope. Stop saying we're going to fail, because it doesn't have to be that way.
No,
it doesn't have to be that way. We will only fail if we give up. We will only fail if we shoot at each other instead of the enemy. That's how we will fail, or we don't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, across the board, we have facts on our side. We have science on our side. We have the investigatory conclusions on our side. All we need to do is to own them. Going back to what I was saying before, I mean, that's what I think a lot of districts in the 2016 election fell away from the Democrats because the Democrats didn't own their positions. Because Donald Trump, on the other hand, did own his positions, as fucked up as they were. He owned them, every single word of everything he was proposing. He owned it. And you know what? If he can get away with just owning bullshit, we can win many, many more elections by owning the truth and staying tough.
Democrats need a drill sergeant. Oh, like Army Irvy. Full metal jacket.
Yeah.
Democrats need a drill sergeant who says, you know, suck it up, Major Fat Body, and gets us off our asses. And that's actually the phrase he used.
I think we need that kind of because we are a little weak
that way, and I'm part of that. You know, I realize, but we got to do something about that. There's the title of the show, ladies and gentlemen. I just heard it being typed.
Thank you.
But this is the point. In all seriousness, party above politics. We have been so judgmental, and rightly so, of the Republicans for constantly putting party above politics. Is this the moment where we say, well, never mind how history will judge us or what's right or wrong? The important thing is that we win in 2020. Party above politics. Party above patriotism in this case. That cannot stand, and we must not commit the same crime that the Republicans have. That and a sergeant who will whip us into shape.
That's true. Right. And, you know, Justin Amash, I've always said Amash. Yeah. Another crack in the facade on the Republican side, which I think is crucial.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been fun to watch the story develop because it goes from being a big deal to not a very big deal to being a big deal to not a very big deal as we learn more. And that's the funny thing about sort of developing news and breaking news is never jump to a conclusion on the first report that you've heard. Because as more facts come in, the story changes, and sometimes for and sometimes against and sometimes both, as it had been in the case of this. There were reasons at first to question Justin Amash for being the first Republican to say that Trump had committed impeachable offenses and that William Barr, his attorney general, had intentionally lied to the public about the Mueller report. That was a big deal. And then, you know, you hear, well, he's kind of a loner. He doesn't have any friends. He's always been sort of anti-Trump. And he's probably going to try to run for president as a Republican. So this sort of discredits him. And then we find out that we get more of his statement. And he says, well, I was a member of the Tea Party. I joined the Tea Party, now the alleged Freedom Caucus, because I wanted lower taxes. But I got in there and I found out all the boys in the club were really just there to hate on Obama.
Yeah.
And when I saw that was their only real purpose, I was kind of out.
Yeah.
You know, and you see there's an Iowa Republican who just flipped parties. I mean, he didn't even go independent. He'd been the longest serving Republican in Iowa politics, and he switched to Democrat because he can't take this anymore. We are starting to see cracks. It counts more, of course, in the Congress, but so it may be a while before anybody follows suit, but it's still significant that Amash came out with this statement.
You know, here's a possibility, Buzz, with Robert Mueller that just has now popped into my head. Maybe he is resisting in order to present the patina that he's not this Democratic shill as Donald Trump has been framing him. Maybe this negotiation is aimed more at Donald Trump. I'm trying to find the benefit of the doubt in this.
I know. Look at us flipping roles here.
Maybe.
I hope so. It doesn't. But I think what we can both agree on right now is this does not look good.
No,
this does not look good. I don't. Whatever his intentions may be they pure or evil or some somewhere in between. It doesn't look good. It just doesn't look good. And surely he sees that. Again, there are so many astounding things. Why does he allow his report to be trampled? And yet, why did he give us so much? It doesn't add up. It doesn't reconcile.
Right. No, it doesn't. Not at all. Okay. Well, we're going to come back to all of this. We're going to talk about Deutsche Bank specifically, too, and Don McGahn and Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. And everything gets worse and worse and worse as we climb our way through all of this crap. But before we do, this is one of the first times I've got to talk to you, Buzz, about Bugger Off Bug Repellent. Because
I think it is. I would remember if we had talked about Bugger Off before.
Well, and I'm so relieved because you're a guy who lives in a part of the world where there are like bugs, flying insects, the size of vultures.
What are you talking about?
You're covered with them right now. I need to get you rush delivery some Bugger Off bug repellent.
This time of year, and I'm serious, and every Floridian knows about this, it's love bug season. And these are little tiny black beetles that fly through the air while humping. That's hence the name love bug. And so they fly in pairs. They fly, you know, connected, like they're refueling in air.
Yeah, you know.
And I was like mowing my lawn the other day. I wasn't like it. I was actually mowing my lawn and walked through a cloud of these things.
Oh, no. A cloud of humping
love bugs. Yes.
Jesus Christ. It didn't give you any ideas, right? I mean, because it's like watching porn. You see a scene from porn and you're like, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I said to myself, I
wish somebody would invent Bugger Off.
That's right. Or I need to find me a bug to hump, something like that. But, you know, thank God there is Bugger Off bug repellent because not whether you're in Florida or whether you're in the swamps of Washington, D.C. or any point in between, we're right on the verge of flying insect season where there are mosquitoes and all kinds of gnats and all kinds of other creepy crawlies that we're dealing with. If you're tired of bug bites, you've come to the right place. Bugger Off Bomb was created to swear off all the pesky mosquitoes that plague us every single season. There's a straightforward ingredient list. It's easy to travel with in its own convenient little screw-off tin. I love this. It's almost like Chris Lavoie's Banded Masculine Candles. It's the same kind of tin where you just screw that off. It's basically indestructible, and I think small enough to fit on your carry-on for those airline flights. It's made specifically for everyone. For example, fishermen, hikers, soccer moms, beachgoers, cruelty-free skincare enthusiasts, you know, that group. Your Uncle Joe, for example. I don't even know who that is, but here it is anyway. No nasty chemicals in it. It is DEET-free. It's kind to humans in the environment. It contains two key ingredients for fighting pesky bugs and other creepy crawlies. Eucalyptus and citronella is in there. It also contains non-GMO soybean oil, beeswax, thyme, rosemary, cedarwood, geranium, basil, eucalyptus, and citronella essential oils. Also excellent ingredients for chicken marsala. I'm just passing that along. By the way, holy hell, it smells way, way better than store-bought repellents. Bugger Off smells clean and fresh, and it won't stain your clothing. Plus, no more skeeter bites, another line of defense against any insect-borne diseases.
Yeah, you know, like skeeter bites, I don't mind the itching, but I don't like the swelling.
I hate the itching, but I don't mind the swelling. Yeah. Just $10.95. See, they need to use that for the next Bugger Off Bomb commercial. Thank you. I see there's a reason why I had you
I'm
on.
I'm here to help.
One. Just $10.95 at buggeroffbomb.com, but use our promo code BOBC for 15% off your order. Support this show by supporting Bugger Off Bomb and stay bug-free all damn summer long. Again, that's Bugger Off Bomb, buggeroffbomb.com, or just click the link on the podcast page. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
It's a group called Norway House, Cold in Atlanta, from Why Are There Strawberries Coming Out of My Face? That's the name of the album. I'm going to read that again. Why Are There Strawberries Coming Out of My Face? That is the actual name of the Norway House.
It's just acne. It'll be better as you mature.
Norwayhouse.bandcamp.com if you want more. Plus, there's a link in the description below to get all of Norway House's music. Okay.
I like it. It's haunting. It's haunting, and I like that.
Yeah, really, really haunting song. And
it's just a touch goth, which I like.
Yes, very much so. And in fact, I'm playing this for Georgia and that ridiculous Georgia abortion law.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been politically active myself, Bob. I've been circulating a petition for a bill that would jail women for choosing to wear eyeshadow. Because I'm not sure.
Shit.
Yeah, that's me. Because personally, I don't feel that women have the right morality and judgment to make a decision about eyeshadow.
Yeah.
Under my bill, only Marilyn Manson has that right.
So that's true.
The petition
I heard
that I'm
right.
circulating.
Yeah.
And that's why I like the dark music.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's the thing. I think that's the core of this entire issue. A lot of men don't trust women to make choices about their own bodies. So we got to do it for themselves. Yeah. We got to do it for them. Got to make their choices for them.
I don't know if it was Kimberly A. Johnson or somebody else who said on Twitter, look, this shouldn't even be about, whether the mother's life is at stake or it's a case of rape or incest. Just make it legal. Just make it legal everywhere.
Yeah.
Please tell us whatever you have to tell us. And then here's where I think I can be Johnny Sunshine and bring you some good news. But lay it out. What's on your mind, Bob?
I think it comes down to body sovereignty. I wrote an entire piece in Salon that's out today, in fact. And I made the case that, you know what, with the abortion issue, I've been talking about this issue for 35 years now.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it's been on the table as a debatable issue for many, many more years and decades prior to that. The thing now, though, I'm really growing tired of this whole kind of recursive, let's backtrack through the life cycle. When does a soul enter the body? When's a person a person? When does life begin? What's the cycle?
Irrelevant. And, all of it irrelevant.
All of it's irrelevant. Because the bottom line in all of this is personal body sovereignty. We have purview over our own internal organs. And if there is a medical treatment that is approved by the FDA to treat a medical condition known as pregnancy, which can kill you, then we have the right to avail ourselves of that medical treatment. I think that's the basic,
absolutely,
fundamental fact of this entire thing. Body sovereignty.
I worry, and I think you're absolutely right. I agree with everything you said there. I don't know if Joe Lunchbox is going to buy into body sovereignty.
Does Joe Lunchbox know Johnny Sunshine? Are they friends?
They live three houses down from here, and I don't know. You know, there's got to be another way to sell that. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, You're talking to smart people mostly, but at some point we're going to want to reach the average person again, busy but I think that a lot of this talk about the stages of life and when the soul whether the mother and whether, you know, whether all these parameters, was there rape, was there incest, was it consensual rape, as one Republican put it. These are all distractions, folks. It's the woman, it's her body, and it's her decision. That's really all there is to it.
Yep.
I'll just go ahead. May I offer up some sunshine on this subject?
Okay, Johnny Sunshine.
Okay, well, here it is. First of all, we have the very good news that district attorneys and prosecutors across the country, including in red states like Utah and Georgia and elsewhere, are already refusing to prosecute these new laws, these new conservative laws. They have that ultimate right. Mm-hmm. They can't be fired. They only by the voters in some cases. But this is not, this is a right that prosecutors have, and prosecutors even in the reddest of states are saying, no, we're not gonna enforce this.
Yeah,
we don't care. They can take Roe v. Wade off the books, and we're still not going to enforce it. And then here's this piece of good news. 72% of the American public, 71, I believe, is the current number. It had been 73. It's 71 now. 71% of the American public supports Roe v. Wade legalization of abortion.
Yeah.
More than 7 out of 10. Let's see. What else we got? Oh, only 23%. Fewer than 1 in four. Fewer than 1 in 5. Fewer than 1 in 4 Americans. Fewer than 1 in 4 Americans support dumping Roe v. Wade.
Right.
So that's a real minority there. That's your pro-life crowd. That's how small they actually are.
Yeah.
And then 52% of Republicans are in favor of keeping Roe v. Wade legalization of abortion.
That's right.
Keeping that in place. Those are all realities that these Republican politicians between Washington and Alabama and Missouri and elsewhere are going to have to face. These are realities, political voting realities they're going to have to face. They've chosen to make this an issue for 2020. Well, guess what? It is. Congratulations and good luck to you. And then the third sort of encouraging thing about this is going back 100 years ago, this sort of goes back to the prosecutors, going back to 100 years ago when abortion truly was illegal in this country, prosecutors could almost never get a jury to convict the woman.
That's right.
So the prosecutor's saying, dump Roe v. Wade, we're still not going to enforce, we're still not going to prosecute women. They say for the last 100 years, juries have refused, in the vast majority of cases, not to prosecute these women. And furthermore, the American public is 100% against you.
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead with this anti-abortion thing and see how far it gets you.
Yeah, but you would think by watching Chris Matthews and Chuck Todd on the, you know, liberal network, you would think that the American people are just lined up with torches and pitchforks against abortion rights, against the right to, you know, a perfectly approved and safe medical treatment.
I endorse the pitchforks and torches nevertheless, because even though we have all of what I've laid out on our side, it is no less a threat. It is no less condemning of women. It is no less demeaning of women. It is no less intimidating to women. And it must be stopped. It must be quelled, and it must be called out for the small minority that it truly is.
Yeah.
This is certainly a time for outrage, even if we know we're going to win. Because we've got to stop this kind of talk and this sort of shaming and labeling of women that occurs because of this. And there's only one way to make that stop, and that's to stop the talk of it to the extent that we can by recognizing it's not really an issue. Abortions are at an all-time low. Why are we even talking about this?
Yeah, I know. Well, the problem
because
is
it's a distraction. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't label it necessarily as a distraction, but I would say
it's a genuine, it's a sincere fight, but it also helps distract from, you know, that other thing, right?
Yeah, that's true. And at the same time, I think it's meant as a gigantic pander to the evangelical base of the Republican Party. I think that's a big part of it. But I think, you know, going back to what I was saying about Chris Matthews and Chuck Todd, what they're doing is for some reason, I don't understand why exactly, but they're perpetuating a lot of the stereotypes around this. I know Chris Matthews has been screaming for the last couple of weeks about the Democrats and late-term abortion, as if there are women lined up for elective late-term abortions to say, okay, get it out of me and kill it. Well, that's not happening. It just doesn't happen. 1% of all abortions happen in the third trimester, and it's strictly, or the late second trimester into the third trimester, and that is strictly because of medical necessity. That is the only reason in this country why late-term abortions happen, because there is some threat to the health and or life of the pregnant mother, or there is some sort of catastrophic birth defect that is going on as well. Meanwhile, Chuck Todd is quizzing Bernie Sanders for some reason about women who choose abortion in order to select the gender of their child, which just, again, never,
why
ever
are we entertaining?
Happens.
Why are we entertaining that
it's
subject?
All it does is perpetuate that weird kind of motivation, which doesn't actually exist.
Yeah. These guys aren't helping. I think, bless their hearts, I think Chris and Chuck aren't entirely with us half the time.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is they're half the time they're right and smart, and half the time they're wrong and stupid.
I thought you were going to say drunk or high.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't infer that or their sanity or anything else. I'm just saying sometimes they're right and make sense, and sometimes they're wrong and it sound ridiculous.
Right.
You have to be aware of that with these two gentlemen. They have a lot to contribute. You know, it's funny. They all three have something in common. They and Sanders all have done some good things and have done some weird things and that are harder to defend. And so, yeah, maybe that's the nature of people to a certain extent. I think for Republicans, though, I think that abortion and voter fraud are a lot alike for them because they play them the same way. And here's what I mean. Republicans like to fix something that isn't broken.
Yeah.
In this case, like I said, abortion's at a minimal. It's none of your damn business. Why are you doing this? And they're portraying it as a major problem. The murdering, the mass murdering of babies. That's what we've got in this country. Mm-hmm. The mass murdering of babies who have rights to and should vote and drink beer. And then you have the argument about voter fraud, which, again, like abortion, does not statistically exist.
That's
so
right.
Once again, in both cases, the tactic is the same, whether it's abortion or voter fraud. Whoever thought we'd lump those two together.
Oh, I know.
The approach is identical in the Republican Party, and that is to gin up something that does not statistically exist into a major problem that, by God, they're going to fix for God and country.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It's the same old marketing ploys that we've been seeing in advertising since mm-hmm. the beginning of advertising, where what they do is they invent a problem and then they create the solution for the problem and then market that solution. So that's what the Republicans are doing. And it's happening right under the noses of people who really ought to know better. What they're saying is there's this problem of, for example, in-person voter fraud, which actually doesn't exist. And I could go into the numbers as to why it's statistically non-existent.
That's just the people who wear fake mustaches.
Exactly. Take my word for it that it does not exist statistically. Right. Okay. And so now they've created the solution for that, which is voter ID. And that suits their agenda, which is to keep minority populations, to keep young people, to keep older people from actually voting in elections.
Which is the real reason that they did it in the first place. And they've also convinced folks like my dad that, you got to make sure there's no fraud. If you're a decent American, you've got ID.
Yeah.
Well, how do you change that perception when it's so completely wrong? I don't know how you combat a thing like that. That's one of the things that drives me most insane is how do we combat these ideas that seem permanently implanted now in a near majority sometimes of the population? It's very disturbing because I know how long it takes historically for the public to change its mind about a thing. Right. I've witnessed our progression on marijuana. I joined Normal in like 1971 or something.
Wow, what a long fight for that, huh?
One of the founding members, and I wasn't a highly active member of that movement, to coin a pun, but I have watched it develop over the decades to the point that I never thought it would be this far. I interviewed Keith Stroop, who was one of the founders of Normal and is today a part of its executive board. And, he and I were discussing how amazing it was, the progress that had been made. Of course, it's been decades since then. Mm. And so I know, and from watching the civil rights movement and even the fight to end the Vietnam War, it takes a long damn time.
Yeah.
And so I know how long it takes to fix these wrong perceptions.
Well, I always say, don't give up, because there's always a way to do it. And I'm living proof that there is a way to do it. I've told this story a gazillion times on the show. And that is that at one point in my life when I was 16, 17 years old, because I didn't know any better and I was raised in a Catholic household, I self-identified as conservative. And I was, self-identified also as a pro-life conservative. And then a friend of mine came along, asked me a particularly salient question. And my knee-jerk response was, oh, I guess I am pro-choice because I've answered, because this guy asked me a question. He said, well, what happens if your girlfriend gets pregnant? And I, in a knee-jerk way, just off the top of my head, I just said, well, that'd be her choice to decide. And then I went, oh, God, I'm pro-choice. When did that happen? Suddenly I realized, I guess I am. And all it takes is one sentence, one question to turn people around on a lot of these things. And you have that aha moment.
By the way, there's a guy on line 3 who says he's your son. I don't know.
Shit, that guy again. All right. You know what? We're going to take one last break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to get into stupid Watergate a little bit here with everything going on with Deutsche Bank and Michael Cohen and Judge Mehta. And so on, right after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit bubblegenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
And when you keep us in the dark, our love will soon become a farce. We have no truth to call our own. You'll have to make it on your own. A simple shift in disguise.
This is Boston's own Quiver, featuring, and it's Quiver with three V's in it. Just
of
as
course,
a
programming note.
Featuring the great Christina Kerr, and this song is called Superheroes. SoundCloud.com/Cambridge Virgo. Link in the description below. Okay.
The indie hits just keep on coming.
I need to get you saying that on tape. Now, I've got an indie music countdown coming up sometime in the next week or two.
Oh, can I play? Can I record some stuff for that? That'd be great.
Oh,
I like that.
Sure. Yeah, whenever you want. Of course. Of course. I never turn you down on that. All right, let's talk about Deutsche Bank and money laundering a little bit for a second here. Yeah, of course, Donald Trump's been laundering money. And of course, Jared Kushner's been laundering money. And again, going back to our original thesis on this program, where the hell is Robert Mueller? Bob, where are you? Bob Mueller, where are you? Okay, so we know this. We've been following this story for a good long time. We have a strong sense that Donald Trump has been laundering money for Russians. I think it first occurred to a lot of us when Donald Trump sold that Palm Beach property, that moldy, mildewy estate in Palm Beach to the aluminum
covered,
king. Or, yeah, the fertilizer.
Covered with love bugs.
Yeah. That's right, covered with love bugs. Humping flying insects at Donald That's Trump's right. property in Palm Beach. Sold it to a Russian on a gigantic markup, made a gigantic profit out of that, raising all kinds of red flags about possible money laundering and so on. And now this Deutsche Bank official comes forward and says that there have been multiple suspicious transactions made during the campaign, during his first year as presidency, by legal entities controlled by Trump and Jared Kushner. You know, this makes me wonder every time I see a story like this, that one of the reasons why Jared Kushner was hired to work inside the White House is right. because Donald Trump wanted to keep him really close in order to protect him.
And of the two, Kushner was more successful at the time, relatively speaking. Certainly hadn't lost the billion and some dollars that Trump lost. It's interesting because this was the big bombshell story of the week from the New York Times. And it revealed that there were typically are because it's required by law, officers within the bank whose job it was and whose specialty it was to sniff out cases of suspicious activity with accounts, particularly money laundering. They were money laundering specialists who were aided by some software, some computer software that literally set off red lights to alert them. Well, nobody set off more red lights apparently than Kushner and Trump. But strangely, every time they reported this to management and said, you know, the law suggests that we really should report this to the Treasury Department, it just never happened. Deutsche Bank management just never got around to it. And in fact, not only allowed Trump to not pay back his loans to the bank, but in addition to that, but let him run roughshod over. At one point, they laid down and let Trump sue them.
Yeah.
And yet they kept him on as a client. Something very, very strange going on there. But in the end, when approached by investigators, Deutsche Bank, like Mazars, Trump's accounting firm, actually asked to be subpoenaed for those documents. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we're going to see them based on the ruling that we got from Judge Amit Mehta, Judge Fast Track, just yesterday.
Judge Fast Track. That's great. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was pronouncing it Meta, as in Meta.
Yeah, so
metadata.
Was I. I emphasize that because I just learned it today, and I'm very proud.
That's great. Well, you know, and I also wanted to mention, too, I mean, the other bit of information that we got from this Deutsche Bank story is that Jared Kushner had some accounts there at Deutsche Bank, and money flowed out of Jared's account into the accounts of Russians.
Yeah. Russians? What? Say yeah. what?
I know. Yeah, this I is know. Because I thought all along it was a big hoax.
I did not see that coming. But you know, yeah, it's good. And like you said, we've kind of known this, or we've certainly known this in our guts from the very beginning. And now we're finally getting the hard evidence. Jeez, it took long enough.
Yeah.
But we're finally getting the hard evidence enough. Yeah, the walls are closing. I mean, I don't care. It's very slow and it's painful, and we get cranky about the fact, and rightly so, that it's not moving fast enough. But oh, make no mistake. You know, this is the pile can only get so high, it seems, before it implodes.
Yeah. And you know, again, I don't know how you can, in good faith, look into a camera and say, this is all a big hoax. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump, because obviously he can lie just at will.
Nobody's,
it doesn't matter.
Nobody's yeah. better and worse at it.
Exactly. But there are a lot of people who have much stronger reputations than Donald Trump who are still looking at this information and going, this is big nothing burger. What
not
are you
convincing.
Talking about?
No, they got nothing. Yeah, some crooked business deal.
Yeah.
Some of his people. You know.
Right, right. And that's just the stuff that's happening in plain view. Like, oh, we're not going to abide by your subpoenas, Congress, because we think you're acting improperly. Well,
I don't know if we respond to these things anymore. I don't know if any of this means anything to us anymore, if it has the impact. I mean, how much more do you need? His campaign manager is in jail. His personal lawyer is in jail.
Yeah.
Doesn't this sort of tell you something about the guy?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't even that alone, which we've known for some time, isn't that enough to begin an impeachment inquiry into this president?
But what we're seeing are a lot of people, including Deutsche Bank, obviously, who seem compelled for some reason. I don't understand this motivation.
Well,
they're compelled to backstop this guy. Whether it's Deutsche Bank or any of the people surrounding Donald Trump, both former and current, I don't understand. Other than some form of compromat keeping them in line, I don't understand what the loyalty is to someone who is, they're treating him, in fact, like he's got like a 90% approval rating. They're treating him like he's George W. Bush on the day
after
9/11.
They were. I don't think they do business with him anymore. I think that ended, I don't know. I mean, it obviously it extended into his presidency, but I don't know if he still has a relationship with him or not. I do hope, and I think we'll get to the bottom of that question. As you know, Deutsche Bank was already fined, what was it, $630 million, I believe.
Yeah.
For laundering Russian money. So they're in trouble. I would think, if I were Deutsche Bank, that I would be very, very cooperative at this point.
Yeah.
That I would want to clean up my act. This is my chance to do so. I'd be happy to give you Trump's financial papers if you'd just be so kind as to send over a subpoena so we can explain why we violated the privacy of one of our customers, then we'd be happy to comply.
Yeah.
Like I said, they already got this ruling from Judge Maeda, the Democrats did, to force Trump's accounting firm, Mazars, to turn over his financial documents from there. This is a very good sign for Congress and its chances in the legal fights against subpoenas that lie ahead.
I noticed something yesterday, Buzz, that you can kind of file away into the back of your head, connected all
there's
of
no
this.
There's no room. I'm sorry, there's no room. It's all
the back of my head's loaded with Russian names right now. Again, no space left. But regardless, one thing I noticed yesterday when I was looking in on Donald Trump's Pennsylvania rally, because I'm insane, and I don't think I need to explain why.
I'm not expressing embarrassment this time. I'm expressing the fear and dread, the horribleness of that rally and how very Hitler it was.
Well, of course, the only reason I watch those things is the same reason why people watch NASCAR races, because they're looking for the crash. And I'm looking for the collapse personally.
Don't apologize. But I think that was, as we've discussed before, one of those historically important set of lies. One of those, one of the most important hate rallies that he's ever held.
Yeah.
Historically important. And, you know, it's hard to know which one of them might be or which one of them might not be, but to have the crowd yelling, lock them up at the FBI and Democrats, and him saying that this is treason and he will have William Barr investigate the FBI and Democrats for treason. This is a complete madman, an emboldened, dangerous man. And it's just so frightening and disappointing to me that the public doesn't see it, that it, and certainly his supporters don't and never will. You know, one of the things I learned in talking to some Trump supporters is that they really don't want to hear the facts.
Yeah,
they don't
no.
care about the facts. All they care about are their feelings, and what they feel is blah, blah, blah. And so never mind the facts. Well, that just, how do I, as a kid who got somewhat educated and focused on news and tried to translate for people medical terms and legal terms and governmental terms, you know, as somebody who's worked with that material all my life, how can you not, my life is based on fact. I don't know if we talked about this before. My belief system is that of a humanist,
yeah.
Somebody who believes in science and fact and the inherent goodness of mankind.
Mm.
You know, and that's what I believe in. That's what works for me. And I just it's hard for a person such as myself, and I think for most people, regardless of your belief system, to find any of this acceptable.
The first two things, science and facts, I'm with you on that one. The inherent goodness of mankind, maybe not so much.
Oh, I see the bad stuff too.
Yeah.
But what I mean by that is I didn't need a book or a religion to tell me that it's wrong to kill people. I just somehow knew that.
Yeah.
You know, I just somehow knew that it was wrong to steal. I didn't have to be taught that. It's somebody else's. You it's theirs, you know. It's not a hard concept to grasp, you know.
Right.
I believe that mankind inherently has that sense. The vast majority of us certainly do, and the vast majority of us.
Well, the thing I noticed at the rally yesterday was Trump wasn't traveling alone, and usually, you know, the Secret Service, White House press corps, or so on, they go along with him on Air Force One when he goes on these rallies and so on. But the one other person I noticed who was with him that I don't normally see at just run-of-the-mill Trump rallies was Donald Trump Jr. Donald Trump Jr. flew with the president to Pennsylvania, flew back with him on Air Force One, probably took another plane back up to New York. But the fact is that Donald Trump Jr. was along, and I wonder why he was along. Could it have been because of this ruling about Mazars? Could it have been because of this Deutsche Bank ruling? Because all of which involve the Trump Organization, of which Donald Trump Jr. is the, co-CEO or something along those lines. I forget exactly. Exactly. Vice president of douchebaggery or something like that.
An officer of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so obviously there was some conversation happening on Air Force One about these cases between Trump and his boy. And
if you and I get in trouble for something, I'm going to want to confer with you. I'm going to want to I want to keep you close while we figure out how we're going to defend ourselves. That's, I think, a fair guess, especially if he doesn't normally accompany for these hate rallies.
And while Robert Mueller is our cock blocker of the day,
Bob,
I'll be the cock blocker of the day, too, because I don't think Merrick Garland is going to rule on this appeal. I think Merrick Garland is going to recuse himself from this D.C. Court of Appeals.
But wouldn't it be sweet?
Why
should he, Bob? I mean, did the Republican Senate play fair with him under Mitch McConnell? I don't know. It's maybe just this once. I mean, it would probably be appealed, and he technically should probably recuse. But
yeah.
I think it'd be fun just to say, nope, I'm staying on this case.
Yeah, and as much as I would like him to see, to see this guy at the head of the three-judge panel that will see this appeal of Judge Mehta's decision, I don't think it's going to happen because I think Merrick Garland has too much, he's almost like Robert Mueller in the sense that he's too by the book, that he's going to see this as an opportunity for Donald Trump to paint the entire ruling when it's handed down as being political because... Merrick Garland and Mitch McConnell, blah, blah, blah.
Let's get a good seat because if it goes the other way, it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and one more thing about Mitch McConnell, too.
Yes, yes.
And this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, Buzz, which is that, whether it's impeachment articles going to a trial in the Senate or it's legislation being passed by the House and then dying in the Senate. We learned today that Mitch McConnell is planning to block every single election security piece of legislation passed by the House of Representatives or introduced in the Senate. So right, nothing along the lines of securing our elections is going to pass the Mitch McConnell Senate. Because, of course, patriotism, Mitch, sovereignty, Mitch, all the rest of
Mitch,
it.
Mitch McConnell, Rush is on line three for you.
Right. Screw national security. Screw the integrity of our elections.
Bob's son is holding again on line two.
I mean, it's maddening knowing that there is no threat from in-person voter fraud. The Republicans are, legislating the hell out of this. But we know that Russia and possibly other countries, Saudi Arabia, China, et cetera, North Korea, are in the process of hacking the United States, hacking our election, interfering with our election process, attacking American democracy. When that's happening and we have evidence of it, of course, Mitch McConnell's not going to do anything.
Well, at least they aren't brown people, and that's the important thing.
Right.
I hope Captain Turtle chokes on a love bug.
All right. While he's humping a croc, you know, see, you got to make the connections between the humping love bugs and the humping Mitch McConnell.
And it's spring, so enjoy.
And a sexy, sexy croc. Okay, so let's see here. Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, sexyliberal.com. It's Jody Hamilton's From the Bunker Podcast, Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour, Randy Rhodes After Hours, Dino Bidala's I Want to Be Your Muslim Friend, Sanity with John Fugel saying the first episode dropped last week, Final Word with Frangela and the Great Rude Pundit, so many more on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Again, that's sexyliberal.com, including this year's show. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes and give everyone a 5-star rating and review. Meanwhile, Buzz Burbank News and Comment, buzzburbank.com, realmnetwork.com. Thursday is the best newscast you're going to hear all damn week long. Buzz Burbank News and Comment, and a little commentary by me in there every once in a while. So make sure you download that.
And this week, one by me too.
Oh, yes, of course. And I hope it's impeachment. I hope it's impeachment. By the way, brand new flavor from Ben and Jerry's to commemorate the whole process. Impeachment is going to taste horrible.
It's just gonna probably, but
all right.
Bless him anyway.
I tried to do a joke at the end, but.